Hey, welcome to Night School, I believe 62. I'm doing this from the field, from the forest field. So I'm not sure the number, but I believe it's 62. And I just walked by a bunch of trees that have been cut down in one of my favorite parks. And I suppose there's some level of karma there, considering the last episode where I bragged about ruthlessly trespassing at a state park when it was closed. But I'm here legally, albeit in a different park. Here legally. This is a totally legal forest field podcast. Fortunately, the trees they cut down were right along the road, so it's not like they went deep into the woods to do it. And I'm sure all that wood will go to great use. I'm sure it will be used to build mini log cabins. And if you could hear that raven, he supports that theory. Clearing trees for log cabins. But what I'm thinking about right now is the importance of process and learning to love the process of doing things. And it's something I think about a lot. It's something I talk about a lot. And it goes back to the idea of the carrot, the dangling carrot, and you're on a treadmill and you're chasing that carrot. I almost always imagine a cartoon. I don't know where that imagery even comes from. Makes me wonder if it was ever actually in place. You often see it with a horse where the rider, the jockey, has a fishing pole with a line dangling in front of the person with that carrot there, and the horse is just following it, but it never ever gets there. It never actually gets the carrot. And that's the process. The process is the horse moving. The process is walking on that treadmill or crawling through that hamster wheel that just keeps spinning. And it also, you know, it connects to that idea of Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill only for it to roll back down. There are so many examples of this basic idea. Even the movie Groundhog Day, the Bill Murray movie Groundhog Day, is an example of this in some way. Basically having to repeat something over and over again and dealing with not just the physical frustration of that, of physically having to do it again and again. Because all of these examples, except for maybe Groundhog Day, are they involve physical strain, physical effort. And even Groundhog Day, he wanders around. He's walking, so it's not like he's just sitting on a couch. Because that's a good way for anybody to access that sort of Groundhog Day experience, is if you just sit there all day. Everything will really be the same if you do that. these examples of someone pushing something or following something and never quite getting there, never quite meeting any kind of goal or reaching any kind of conclusion. And it also plays into the cliche phrase, it's about the journey, but not the destination. And when we hear journey, not the destination, we think adventure. Of course it's about the journey, because the journey is exciting. Things happen on a journey. It's scenic. And it's easy to think of that phrase that way. It's easy to think of the best possible journey. But oftentimes the journey is filled with ups and downs and extended bouts of boredom. Sometimes the journey means seeing the same thing over and over again. Sometimes it means moving in the same direction for long amounts of time with seemingly no end. So the journey really isn't necessarily some pleasure cruise. Because it's very easy to take that phrase and mistake it for that. To mistake it for some grand adventure where everything's exciting and fun. But so often journeys have struggle. And true adventure has ups and downs. It has difficulty. Not fun difficulty, but unforeseeable circumstances that aren't always pleasant. And in that way, the journey is simply the process. And that phrase, another way of saying that could be, it's about the process, not necessarily the product. And you'll hear that a lot when it comes to products. You'll hear companies talk about how they've put love into what they do. They love the process of creating something. And that adds some sort of mystical quality to whatever that product is. If it's a company that's making a literal product, they will say made with love. And I used to completely reject that. I used to completely reject that idea. But I do think there's something to be said for loving the process. And maybe, if there truly is a product that they can then sell or give away, I do have to believe there might be something in that. There might be something beneficial as I climb through, hopefully not sticker bushes. There might be something that affects the product when you do embrace that process, when you do love that process for what it is, regardless of the outcome. And people have looked into that, whether you can bless some sort of product to make it taste better or make the consumer feel better when they use it. People have looked into that, and there have been studies that suggest it's true. And I'm sure a lot of skeptical people would challenge it, and I'm not too invested in the idea either way. But I do think there is something to be said for simply enjoying the process, even if it doesn't affect the outcome, even if it doesn't make chocolate taste better. I believe there's something to be said for even a company enjoying the process of creating something, even in a factory setting, if someone is enjoying that somehow. And I think a lot of people do believe it. I think a lot of people do believe that idea when you think about cooking. When you go to a restaurant, and people have this idea that if the chef enjoys making the food, if the employees enjoy serving, but especially when it comes to cooking, if the person cooking the food truly loves what they're doing and invests a certain part of themselves into that process, you can taste it or somehow detect it. Maybe it's not as easy as tasting it. Maybe it doesn't actually affect the flavor, but there's something about that experience. And that's another thing that's been looked into before. I've heard of examples where customers aren't exposed to the kitchen at all. They have no idea what the vibe is in the kitchen. They have no idea what the demeanor is of the people cooking their food. But people have noticed a tangible difference, or they've had a different experience. They've detected something different when the cooks don't enjoy what they're doing and don't invest a part of themselves in the process. So it's interesting, and there are a lot of ways that that scenario presents itself that aren't mystical, or they're not described as mystical. While there are other examples that are just straight up mystical, of priests, shaman, blessing items. And either way, I believe it's the same thing. Whether you want to view it as mystical, whether you want to view it as just some, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't even know what to call it, because to me, it's there's something inherently mystical about it, and simply because it can't be explained. But even if it could be explained, I'd still consider it some sort of mystical sense. And my own experience with enjoying the process has also been somewhat mystical. Because I think you have to remove yourself from the immediacy of what it is you're experiencing. If you're pushing that boulder up the hill and you're only focused on that boulder, your only desire is to put that boulder up there, knowing it will just roll back down, you're going to hate what you're doing. If you're just focused on that carrot and all of your self-worth, all of your self-satisfaction is focused on the carrot, you're again going to hate the process. But if you enjoy everything that leads up to that, you may be able to get something else out of the process. There may be byproducts. They might not be the product. They might not be the carrot. They might not be the boulder. But there may be other aspects of that process that you gain from. You gain something from them. And so often we are in this hamster wheel. We feel like we are just spinning our wheels. And we practice or we repeat something. And we're trying to get some result. And it's difficult to do that when you don't feel like anything is changing. If you're just spinning the hamster wheel over and over again and nothing is changing. Your owner hasn't even changed your sawdust in months. Your whatever it is, wood chips. whatever it is that's on the bottom of hamster cages. You know, everything has stayed the exact same. The scenery is the exact same. There's not much of a journey. This, you're spinning the wheels, you're moving your body, but nothing is really changing. And that's why breakthroughs are so important. That's why when you practice something, it stops being meaningful, it stops being fun, when you don't notice any sort of change. When you practice guitar over and over again and you feel like you're not getting any better. You're exercising, but you're not noticing any difference. You're not losing weight. You're not building muscle. You're meditating, but you don't feel any better. You don't feel any relief. But then you have breakthroughs, and those are what keep you going. Even if they're rare, once you have a breakthrough, and you simply know that it's possible to experience that breakthrough, whatever it is, whatever that breakthrough is, that will keep you going, and that will give you love for the process. I mean, say it is cooking. Say you are cooking, and you know, you want to get good. You have this sort of beginner's energy, this beginner's tenacity where you want to be the best cook. You want to succeed in a very competitive field. You want to work in the best kitchen. You're never going to work in the best kitchen if you don't work your ass off. That's what they tell you. And, you know, you're doing that over and over again. You're making the same dishes every night. You're working at Olive Garden. It's a limited selection of options. You're making just the same items every night. But eventually you get feedback. Somebody tells you that they really loved their pasta. They really loved their soup. Something, I don't know. Olive Garden's not a great example because I think all you do is probably heat it in a microwave. I don't know. If I'm wrong, I apologize to Olive Garden. I apologize to Olive Garden anyway. I owe them an apology from a long time ago. But, you know, if you don't get any kind of feedback, you're not really going to enjoy it. But if you feel like something is happening, if it's going somewhere, somebody is enjoying it, that's a breakthrough in and of itself. If you feel like you are serving a purpose. And often that does happen. It has nothing to do with you. If you feel that pushing that boulder up the hill is helping somebody else, that's a breakthrough. If somebody's like, you know, every time you push that boulder up the hill, can't think of a great example of how that would help somebody. And the boulder one is interesting. Sisyphus is interesting because there is no real goal. He's being tortured. He is being punished. And there isn't a carrot dangling in front of him. He's pushing something that he doesn't want to push, and he has to do it over and over again. And this is where it gets into the Camus idea. The philosopher Camus talked about the idea of, well, what if Sisyphus begins to love what he's doing? And that's what I mean by investing yourself in that action. Investing yourself in the journey of pushing the boulder up the hill. But there are so many ways that we get distracted. You know, we have this idea that, oh, you know, I'm going to do this certain behavior over and over again, but I'm going to be completely fixed on getting one result. I'm going to be completely fixed on getting that carrot. And one way that people do this is in relationships. They will jump on a carousel that goes around and around, and they repeat the same behavior over and over again with the expectation or hope that that ceramic pony, that stone pony, whatever the hell those are made out of on carousels, they hope that that pony becomes a real horse. And people are on that quest for love. They are looking for that. That's why people are on these apps. That's why people are swiping on Tinder. The act of swiping on Tinder, same movement as a carousel. Profound, I know. Tinder's just a carousel. But that's what people are doing, and they're jumping on a lot of different ones. Have you tried this app? Have you tried Plenty of Fish? You tried OkCupid. People are doing that, and they're trying to meet people through friends. They're going to those singles events. There's a singles dance down at the YMCA. Maybe a real stallion will be there. And they're repeating that over and over again. And there's nothing very enjoyable about that process. It's probably true for some people. Some people probably do enjoy meeting a lot of people, dating a lot of people, simply to get to know them. Maybe there's some, you know, sexual thing where it's a chance to have sex with a lot of people or get to know a lot of people. You know, just that's what's enjoyable to them. They're a free spirit. But most people in my experience, and knowing where my mind was at when I was younger and hopped on dating apps and that kind of thing, you know, you're really completely focused on this end result. You're completely focused on those people fulfilling a certain... It's almost like you have this prophecy. It's like, I have the prophecy that I will find the one. And so you have this role in mind that you expect these people to fill. And if you meet somebody who's even mildly okay, you're like, oh, can't wait to seal the deal on this one. Can't wait to put a ring on it, whatever it is. I can't wait to introduce this person to mom, you know, whatever it is. But it's more about that person fulfilling that role than it is, well, let's see who this person really is. Let's see what this person's really all about. Let's see if this person even is a horse. I don't know, and that often happens when people experience a breakup. They've invested so much of themselves into this other person. Even if that situation wasn't about a role, even if that was about a genuine connection to another human being and you invested in that person, you're left with a, you know, it's like you had a car and it was suddenly impounded. And you go out to your garage and you're like, oh, there's no car in this garage. This garage is empty. I need another car. I need a car in this garage. And that's what your focus becomes. It's like, I'm going to buy another car. I'm going to go around to all the used car lots, and I'm going to find myself a car. Even if I have to rent a car, even if I'm so lonely for a car that I have to rent one, I'm going to do that. But if you have to test drive a million cars, that's what you're focused on. You want a car in that garage. You know, you don't want to have to take the bus to work. There's a practical side, you know. We live in a world where we got to drive cars, man. You need a car. You got to get to work. You got to go meet your friends for happy hour. You got to go to Olive Garden. So you need a car. And you could take the bus. You could walk. You can do some things. And that would be too much of a process, though. You'd be pushing the boulder up the hill. In that case. But you have this carrot that you're after. You're after a car. And the fact that your garage is empty is a reminder. You need a car, not just for the practical reasons that somebody might need a car, but you need one so you can put it in that space. Because there is a... You didn't buy a two-car garage for nothing, you know? You didn't buy it so it could be empty. And if you don't find a car... If you don't find that car that you're looking for, you might start to fill the garage with other shit. You might start hoarding. You know, you start filling it with garbage. You start filling it. You can't get rid of things anymore. You know, you're so hung up about your car that got impounded that, and you're so sad that you lost something. You start to have abandonment issues because your car abandoned you. Your car was taken away from you. So you no longer want to get rid of stuff. You're like, you know I already read that newspaper, but I kind of don't want to get rid of it. The idea of getting rid of that newspaper makes me feel sad. Or those old clothes that don't fit me anymore. You know, I'm kind of attached to them and I don't want to get rid of them. This and that, old toys. I don't know, whatever it is. And so you start to fill up your garage and you're like, well, you know, I haven't gotten a car yet. I haven't bought that car. But hey, at least I'm making use of the space. You know, at least I'm filling up that garage with stuff. With stuff. But then one day you find a car. Probably when you're least looking for it. Probably when you're walking to work or taking the bus, you happen to go by a car lot. Or maybe just a house. You didn't even go to a car lot. But you walked by a house, and it's for sale by owner. Someone is selling their old T-Bird. And you're like, you know what? That's the car I was looking for. You know, just when I gave up on the idea of buying a new car and filled my garage with a bunch of crap, I see that car. The car that I want. And so you buy it and you drive it home, and then you're like, fuck. I can't park it in my garage because it's filled with shit. And then you leave your car out in the driveway and it gets broken into, or you know, something happens to it. And you should have cleared out your garage or not filled it with shit. But you needed something to fill that space. And obviously this isn't a perfect metaphor, but I think it does work for the way people view relationships. They feel like, especially when they are used to having one, they need to fill that void. They need to fill that role. And they don't want to be the person who's going to happy hour at Olive Garden who doesn't have a car. You're meeting up with your coworkers and they all have cars. All your friends have cars. You're the guy who took the bus to Olive Garden. You don't want to feel like that guy. You know, like I said, not a perfect metaphor, but I feel like it fits to some degree. There's this expectation that you've created within yourself. And when you lose something that has a certain role in your life, there's this idea that you have to replace it with something, that you have to fill that void with something else. And romance is a big one because so much of our self-esteem and self-worth and connection with the world is based on that. You know, our desire to continue on, to procreate, it's all wrapped up in that. There are so many wires crisscrossing and crossing, and you know, it's a part of us too that often gets the most messed up for whatever reason. So of course we want to fill that role. It's like a job in an office, you know. That person is your secretary. No, that's a bad way to think of it. You know, you're, I don't know, some important employee at your company just left and you've got to fill that role. That's often what it's like when you lose somebody who you've been romantically involved with. But it also translates to friendships. And friendships can be very circumstantial. You think about being in high school, where, you know, a lot of the friendships you make at that time are just circumstance. You like these people enough to spend your lunch hour with them, but it's not like you have a deep connection. A lot of it's based on having a similar reaction to the set of circumstances you're in. Things change. And even if you stay in touch with people, chances are, unless you're just a total townie, unless you don't want to change at all, you're not going to have that same connection to that same group of people throughout your entire life. And maybe if you're lucky, you were able to connect with people who have a really deep, you know, there's more than just a circumstantial friendship. And those do happen, but they're rare. And a lot of it's based on circumstance. Or if you've ever worked at a place where you socialize with your coworkers a lot, you'll find that once you leave that office, you might think these people are your best friends. You spend all day with them. You have a good rapport with them. You always have something to talk about. When you go to happy hour at Olive Garden, you always have something to talk about because you work together. There's always gossip. There's always shop talk. There's always something. But you find that when you leave that job, you're like, oh, we're going to stay in touch. I'll still be coming to at least one happy hour a month. You know, make sure you order the gnocchi soup in advance for me because I'll be there. And then you realize, you know, man, things have changed. That circumstance has changed. And it's the same thing if you visit with high school friends. You're like, you know, the scenery has changed. Something is different. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Of course, there's something nostalgic and sad when things change, especially I'm someone like that. I'm someone who can be consumed by nostalgia if I let myself be haunted. But you know, it's we get in these situations where things make sense while we're there. There are connections while we are there. And then when circumstances change, we're like, what the fuck? But you have to enjoy that process. You have to enjoy that journey, so to speak. The journey of simply being there. Because a journey might simply be just having a certain job and being friends with certain people while you have that job. It might be being in school, having certain friends while you're in sixth grade. You know, that might be the process. It's not that you're all gonna, you know, you think about people who are like, you know, when we're all grown up, kids sitting around, when we're all grown up, we're all gonna live on the same street and raise our kids together. Sometimes people do that. See, people have fantasies. That's their carrot. By the way, I'm just walking back and forth on the same part of the trail. Probably looking completely insane. But anyway, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I just want to pace back and forth on a trail, talking into my phone. But people will have these fantasies where it's like, we're all going to live on the same street and we're going to be together forever. We're all going to go to the same colleges, but things change. If you've ever gone off to college and gone back to your hometown and met up with a couple people you used to smoke weed with, you'll realize like there's this empty feeling. You're like, wait a second. You know, this doesn't have the same feeling, and I have nothing against these people, but something has changed. But you can look back at that experience and be like, that was great while it lasted. That was good while it lasted. I got something out of that because I did what I could with what I had available. And that's what enjoying the process is, even if it's repetitive. You know, you can look back on relationships where you went to the same places to eat and had the same conversations every day. It's like, fall into a ditch. That's a breakthrough. If you fall into a ditch, that's a breakthrough. Especially if you're walking the same trail back and forth, which I realize is, you know, sort of in line with this whole topic. Walking the same trail back and forth, and then you fall into a ditch. That changes everything. Yeah, you just, there's a lot of repetitive behaviors, and I mean friendships, relationships can feel like Groundhog's Day. It's like, you know, for 4 years while you're in college, you know, the friend that you met freshman year comes over and you get high and watch, you know, Happy Days, Friends, sitcoms. But do you want to do that forever? You can enjoy what you're doing at the time. You're doing what you can with what you have at the time. But are you going to want to repeat that forever? Maybe. If that's your carrot, you know, it's all, there's that relativity to it all. You know? But it's still, it all comes down to enjoying that process. And sometimes you can only do that in retrospect. Sometimes you'll look back on something and you'll see it through the lens of nostalgia and you'll be like, well, that wasn't so bad, even though there were aspects of it that were boring. I actually got something out of it. And you might be sad that it's over, but you're like, I got something out of that situation. And hopefully you can do that. You know, hopefully you can do that with the things that you experience that seem tedious, that don't ever really give you that conclusion or satisfaction that you want. Hopefully you can look back at that and accept it for what it is, because you have to let go in order to do that. You have to let go. You have to accept that, oh, you know, the old car I had is no longer in my garage, you know, and you can't be eager to get a new car. I mean, that metaphor ends when you consider the fact that you need a fucking car to go so many places, but it still works. It still works. I'm going to make it work. I'm not going to let go of that metaphor, that's for sure. But that process of letting go of things, and we try to hold on to them because a sense of our identity, a sense of who we are, is invested in these things. But if you see these things as all part of the process and something that builds you into who you are, they become satisfying in their own right. And if you're able to do that while you're doing it, even better. Because so often we go traveling, just to go back to the journey destination quote, the cliche, it's not the journey, it's the destination idea. So often we look back at the journey and appreciate it later, but we didn't appreciate it while we were there. because our leg was broken, because we fell into a ditch, because we didn't have enough water on the journey. But you look back once all those struggles are over and you were like, that was one hell of an experience that I'll talk about forever or think about forever. And I forgot where we were going. You know, that's what you end up saying. It's like, I don't even remember where we were headed. What were we looking for? But you remember, you know, the experience of that journey. It's something I try to keep in mind. I think it's something that you learn when you exercise. It's learned when you have certain disciplines, certain creative exercises, creative projects, things that require work that's not always fun. You have to find yourself enjoying those little breakthroughs that come as part of that, as part of that repetition, as, you know, part of that whole experience. And it goes for the people we know. It goes for literal journeying. It goes for actually driving and journeying in a vehicle, not just a metaphorical vehicle. It goes for pretty much anything we do, any activity or behavior we do. And to go back to Groundhog Day, that's the whole point of the movie, is he learns that he can start interacting with his environment. Even though it's the same day over and over again, he learns that he can start interacting with his environment and change it and affect it. And even though it repeats each day, he starts to get little missions. He develops little missions. And, you know, of course, the conclusion of that is that he gets to wake up from what at first seemed like a repetitive nightmare. You know, it seemed like hell, just doing the same thing over and over again, the same person saying the same thing to you each day, everything being in the same exact spot. That seems like a nightmare. But he realizes that he can engage the world a certain way and complete little missions. It's almost like a video game, Groundhog Day. Hamster Wheel, Groundhog Wheel, that's the name of the movie. That's the name of the sequel, is Groundhog Wheel. But he starts to realize that he can change things, and he starts to enjoy that. You know, even though he knows what to expect, the fact that he can choose how he responds to it, the fact that he has control, makes it enjoyable in its own way. This is just going to be a little addendum while I'm thinking about that Groundhog Day idea. So this is just going to be tacked on to the same episode, but it's an addendum. And with that Groundhog Day idea in mind, it's important to remember that everything becomes the new normal. And it's why you'll hear not just people who are grinding through a day job and not satisfied with their repetitive home behavior. It's not just them who will feel like they're in a Groundhog Day and they're just grinding through the same thing over and over again. You'll also see it from people who are rock stars, for example. You'll hear stories from rock stars where they get bored. They start to feel like their life is extremely repetitive. Even if they're traveling, they're going to new cities all the time, they're performing for large audiences, that becomes the new normal. And it's important to see how patterns develop, no matter what level your life is on, no matter how quote-unquote interesting your life is, no matter what you do. It's very easy for things to become repetitive, and it scales. If you think for a rock star, they might be flying from Tokyo to Europe and back to Florida in the span of several days where they're going to perform at each show. But if you do that enough times and it becomes part of a pattern, it becomes the new normal. Because what normalcy is it's just patterns. It is just what makes something normal is the fact that it's repeated enough to become normal. So in that way, anything can become the new normal if it's repeated enough. And it's the reason why atrocities, unfortunately, sometimes become the new normal in war-torn countries. And it's why people who are pampered, people who are wealthy, who have everything in life, also become bored, because it becomes the new normal. And we, no matter who we are, humans have trouble breaking that mold. They have trouble appreciating that process if it's repetitive, if there aren't breakthroughs. And God forbid your standard of normal gets set too high. Because that's what you see happen with rock stars and wealthy people as well. People who have been famous, is they get used to, say, flying on private jets or a certain crowd size. That becomes their normal, and that also becomes their standard. But then say they lose money, if it's a wealthy person, they lose money and they're no longer able to live the same life of luxury. Maybe it's still a very stable life, an otherwise affluent life, but it's not quite to the same standard, and it disrupts them. And you see that a lot with performers, especially ones who have an extremely high peak where they're able to become very successful, very popular, but it's not sustainable. That popularity becomes the new normal to them if they don't keep themselves in check. And then when that drops and they have to experience another new normal, one that's not met with the same fanfare, maybe they're not able to fly on the same private jet, they're in a shittier tour bus, you know, maybe that's humbling. Maybe that's what they need to break the mold. I think a lot of people would say that they've actually benefited from being humbled like that. They've benefited when their star drops a little bit, but I think a lot of people can't handle that. Because change is hard. As much as we want change, as much as we want things to be different, change is extremely difficult to initiate, to commit to. It's rough. It's why so much self-help is just based on making the most minute, small changes. Because it all starts somewhere. But yeah, that idea of the new normal and Groundhog Day, where, you know, it doesn't matter what the scale is, it doesn't matter what the situation is, a pattern will develop, and that pattern creates a certain normalcy. And that can drive certain people crazy. You know, people are different too. There are some people where if they go into Olive Garden and the server remembers them and remembers what they order every time, they're fucking thrilled. They're like, she remembers. She knows exactly what we want. That's what they want. They want that Cheers sort of vibe where they know their name. They know what they want on the menu. And there are other people, myself included, who, if I were to enter Olive Garden and the waitress remembered who I was and what I order every time, I would probably never go back. You know, I'd be like, they found me out. You know, I'd be embarrassed. And why that is, I don't know. I don't know why I'm that way. But I find that once someone notices a pattern in me, I have that oppositional defiance where I kind of want to break it. I would order something different on the menu if that were to happen. Oh, you're going to get the nochi? I can't even remember what a nochi is. You're going to get the nochi? And I'd be like, no. I'm going to get the veal. I'd have to defy that. I'd have to try to break the pattern. Because there are different types of people. Because I certainly know people who love to be recognized. They love to be seen as a regular. And I know people, not just me, who kind of feel like they've been outed when that happens. I don't know why it is. But that also shows you how some people enjoy a certain repetition. They enjoy having the same thing for Sunday dinner every week and watching the same shows night after night for their entire life, and some people don't. And the way I said that sounds condescending, but it isn't, because people are different. People react to those patterns in their life differently. But those patterns do find you. And the important thing to remember, just like the close to the main part of this before I added this addendum, like I was saying about Bill Murray and Groundhog Day, keep wanting to say Groundhog's Day. I believe it's just Groundhog Day. But Bill Murray in Groundhog Day finds that he can change things. He can make little decisions for the better that break the pattern a little bit. And even though the day repeats, he's got to find exactly which things to change. He's got to find the right things to take under his control. And that's how he solves the puzzle. But it's the same thing for Olive Garden. Because if you find that the waitress at Olive Garden starts correctly guessing what you're going to order every time you go in for happy hour, turns out you have other options. You can break the mold. You can choose something else. You know, if someone starts predicting what you're going to do and you don't like it, you can choose something else on the menu. Olive Garden has options. You have control.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me.